in some places, it was just necessary to make a fake brand. Like, you know, of course, this drug doesn't exist in reality, even though now, you know, after the movie got released, there is this thing called Trank.
Wait, tell me about Trank.
I don't know exactly what it is made of, but it's a compound. You combine it with fentanyl and it makes the fentanyl high last twice as long, but it also eats up your skin.
Whoa.
and people have gotten addicted to it. And apparently, like, it does the double effect where you get addicted to both fentanyl and Trank.
Uh-huh.
And still, like, people are doing this drug, and I think, like, I saw it as like, oh, now if people are really inspired by the movie, they can do the whole experience now. They can follow her plan.
You are listening to the Screen Slate podcast. I'm your host, John Derringer, and on this episode, I am thrilled to speak to the LA-based Norwegian filmmaker Christopher Borgli about his new film, Sick of Myself, which opens today at IFC Center from Utopia and Friday in Los Angeles. Sick of Myself is a very uncomfortable, very dark comedy about a young woman in Oslo who develops a severe facial disfigurement after taking Russian anxiety medication purchased off the dark web. This catapults her to a level of fame surpassing even her art star boyfriend and lands her gigs in the advertising and modeling worlds. Borgli develops this anti-romance in a really smart and deadpan hilarious way. John Waters put it near the top of his art form top 10 last year and called it pretty fucked up, which is a great description and a great compliment. In this pod, we start out by talking about Borgli's first feature, Drib, a sort of metafictional quasi-documentary about a viral comedian scamming an energy drink company, and its short film Whateverist with musician Todd Terrier. Before getting into Sick of Myself, the advertising industry, synthetic drugs, and a lot more, it's a really fun, really wild episode. Before we begin, I want to give a hearty shout out to our Patreon supporters. Screenslit is a reader and listener-funded publication, so if you appreciate the pod, our New York City repertory film listings, or anything else we do, visit patreon.com/screenslate, and you can join our Discord, get access to special events, get discounts from our partners, all kinds of other stuff. And as a final shout out, if you are listening to this on the day the episode goes live, that's Wednesday, April 12th, I'll be moderating tonight's 7:30 p.m. Q&A with Christopher Borgli live at IFC Center, or you can go Thursday night and see him with the comedian Jeremy Levick, which is also at 7:30 p.m. Whatever you do, don't miss it. It's a fantastic film, and here is our discussion with Christopher Borgli. I was really taken and sick of myself with the specificity of the way the advertising industry is portrayed in the commercial making industry, and of course you play the filmmaker yourself.
Yeah.
And Sick of Myself, and then seeing Drib, it's even more, gets even more into that world, like particularly the creative director character. I feel like his voice is so specific and feels so authentic to that self-delusional, like insecure but really aggressive kind of personality.
Yeah,
it feels like maybe there's personal elements of that from your own experience in advertising as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it was like the first vessel for investigating or critiquing kind of an industry that I've been seeing myself. And using that story as a way to, like, you know, expose some of that, how those meetings look like, how the rhetoric works, what that delusion feels like, what that media manipulation feels like, trying to make like an experience out of that critique. And I feel like personally that I you know, it was my first attempt at a feature film, and it felt like I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. And I feel like I'm not shying away from having a second go at something.
Mm-hmm.
So Sick of Myself, like, you know, this, some of the things that I felt wasn't handled right or that I didn't do properly the first time around, I just gave it another go. And it, even with my short films, like, I don't know if you've seen the one called Former Cult Member Hears Music for the First mm-hmm. Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, again, just like, I knew that there was something about in Drib that, like, if only I could show you how I really intended it to look and feel like. Uh-huh. And so that was like kind of like a short film made out of the frustration of, like, I need to be just a better director. I need to do this better, and I need to do it again. And I guess it's like some redemption in it or something.
Interesting, yeah. In that sense, do you feel like Sick of Myself is kind of like a second first feature, if that makes sense?
Yeah, exactly. It's like in a dumb or snide way, I've thought of how they degraded Pluto from being a planet to like it's no longer a planet.
Yeah.
That's how I saw Dribs. Like, it used to be a feature, now it's just an experiment.
Yeah.
And Sick of Myself is like my proper debut.
Right. I mean, but I think one of the things that's really great about Drib is the way that it becomes this sort of like meta self-reflexive commentary on its own, I guess, perceived shortcomings. Although I think that that works really well in the film's favor.
Yeah.
Is that something you had always envisioned, or is that something that came across organically in the making of the film? Because it is, as a viewer, sort of a little bit difficult to tell like what's fact and fiction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as I said, like I wanted to make an experience out of media manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'm okay saying it now, like the whole story is fake. There's nothing real about it. The only thing that's truthful in it is the very origin of the story, which is like me and him went about and made these like fake fight videos in an attempt to get on the front page of worldstarhiphop.com.
And you were successful?
Yeah, we did. It got like, it had millions and millions of views. It was like one of those like viral fight video clips. Mm-hmm. And then we just thought, or I think I got a phone call from like some marketing, an ad agency, and said like, how'd you make that go viral? Like, what was your recipe? And I thought like, oh, isn't that funny if somebody like try to get Amir to, you know, use his notoriety and to help promote some sort of product. And then of course, energy drinks made a lot of sense. And then suddenly it's like, oh, there might be a funny story here.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a recipe? Was this something you and Amir had sort of like sat down and tried to figure out crack the code, or do you feel like it was just ultimately like lightning struck and things went in your favor?
I think it was just like what they call like justice porn. You know, it's someone clearly antagonizing someone else and getting what they deserve. You know, watching a bully being counter-bullied. and so it was just that, like in the video, like he's walking around with a baseball bat in the streets of Oslo, and he starts like trying to provoke this like huge bodybuilder. And then he gets like, of course, knocked out. And you know, this bodybuilder is like a former Mr. Universe champion winner, just a huge guy we found in Norway. And I'm just like, we shot that probably like 10 times before it looked real. And we didn't think more of it. It, you know, 2 days later, it was on the front page of like World Star. And then, I don't know, so one of those like viral news channels who were like debating the clip. And it became like a little bit of a cultural moment. Oh yeah. And we even got like, he got interviewed by the BBC News, and he stayed like in character when doing that, pretending it was all real. I think that was like back in 2014, and it was like kind of just I think we saw it as like an Andy Kaufman-esque project.
Sure.
And it wasn't supposed to be a feature film. It was just the Norwegian Film Institute back then had something called like New Directions, and you could apply with like a drawing if you wanted to, like very loose ideas. And they would fund with a limited fund, like an idea based on something that felt like tackling new media. It was modern, and this, you know, checked all the boxes. And they just gave us funding to expand it to a feature film. And it was no requirements on format, or could it be documentary? Could it be, you know, fiction? And the process took over and kind of led way and made it what it became. And it was a little bit, it felt like a little bit out of my control almost. And in the end, I was like, I think confused myself of like, what is this? Like, is this a feature? I don't know.
And it's shot. It's shot internationally. Like, it's both in Oslo and in Los Angeles.
In LA, yeah.
Had you already spent a lot of time in LA, or was this kind of a project that like got you into LA?
It was actually because before this, I'd made a short film called Whateverest.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
With like a Norwegian electronic musician Todd Terge, and he had like a hit song, Inspector Norse. We made this like a fake documentary about his supposed inspiration behind the song, and made up this character that we called Inspector Norse, who was like this guy who lived in rural Norway who made his own drug recipes and dance videos.
Which feels like a very real type of guy, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. People did think it was real. It was like, even The Guardian had like a write-up about it that they had to amend the piece with like, we thought this was real, but in fact, this is fiction.
Yeah.
But that piece got like popular enough where I was suddenly getting like advertising opportunities. And I was flown to LA like a couple of times to do ads. And I saw like the mechanisms and the behind the scenes were even like more exaggerated and more obvious and kind of more horrific here. And when we made that, you know, the fight video thing and the idea that he was going to get like entangled in this advertising process, I thought, well, then why don't I use my, my personal experience of having done this in LA and how that feels like to get, you know, flown in, housed at a fancy hotel, and then having all these like dumb meetings, and you know, using this fictional story as a way to like basically just go through the process that I've been through many times.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And then with Sick of Myself, is that something you'd always envisioned as being set in Oslo? Do you feel like it's like a particularly Norwegian film, or is it a story that you had felt was adaptable? I guess that's another way of just asking too, like what was kind of the genesis of Sick of Myself?
Yeah, it was like an image that was like in the back of my head for so long. It was about like Norwegian youth, maybe specifically like a blonde Norwegian girl with a pretty horrific skin disease, but this person seemed happy. That was in my head. There was like a contrast there with the visuals and the mood of it that felt a little bit uncanny or jarring or something. The first time I tried to make something around this was like in 2007. I made a music video that dealt with this image, but didn't really make it into that big of a story. And it was like after I'd moved to LA and I started noticing how the fashion industry was really making a big deal about inclusivity, that being like the main, most important element of the fashion industry for a moment was, you know, including new body types and new faces and moving away from old beauty standards. And then suddenly the image in my head made sense in a larger cultural context.
Yeah.
And suddenly I saw, oh, if I can somehow combine these two, I think there's a story there. There's a incentive for this skin disease if it's self-inflicted somehow. And then the title showed up in my head, Sick of Myself. So it was an English title. But I had just moved to LA and I didn't have footing here. I didn't have connections. I didn't know where to go with an idea. Mm-hmm. So I did what I had done in the past. I applied for a writing grant in Norway through the Film Institute. And once that was approved, that, you know, made the movie Norwegian. Mm-hmm. And then it grew from there. But I think living in LA and being surrounded by a certain kind of person or personality that was more ambitious, more opportunistic, maybe more narcissistic, I think that created the character, because I wouldn't see that as often in Norway. It's like a more atypical for a Norwegian person to have those traits. Mm-hmm. So there was something about like Norway and Oslo living in my head, but then me physically being like exposed to an LA mindset created like Signe, the main character in Sick of Myself.
Yeah, it becomes sort of like a hybrid, I guess, of these two different sensibilities. I think that's one of the really interesting themes of the film, this idea of like inclusivity in advertising and how there's this ostensibly positive social aspect to it, but it's also because it's advertising, it's put in the most like rapacious, hypocritical capitalist kind of terms. And I think that's something the film dramatizes really well. Do you want to talk more about that aspect of the film or kind of your thinking around those themes?
Well, I just started noticing this, as I said, like sudden big focus on stories of marginalized people or, listening and giving platform to victims and being inclusive. And I saw it as like, oh, this is kind of generating an economy around victimhood. And I thought, well, in the wrong hands, this could create an incentive. Sure. And somebody could be drawn to feeling, inspired by or wanting to have a piece of that economy. And I was thinking about just like how uninteresting it was made potentially for like a blonde Norwegian upper middle class girl,
right? Sort of like the least marginalized person imaginable. Like how can you claim a piece of that? Yeah,
like the conversation just like being so uninterested in her. Mm-hmm. And just kind of looking at the incentives through the lens of someone who's crazy enough to act on them, mm-hmm. and following the kind of comedic trail of self-destruction just to win this like sudden new opportunity.
Yeah. And I mean, her character also, of course, interfaces with her boyfriend, who is also a narcissist. And there is this sort of game of like one-upmanship between them, or, you know, essentially in the beginning of the film, her boyfriend, who's an artist, who's making work out of stolen furniture, is kind of in the spotlight and maybe even not acknowledging or even realizing certain, I guess, inspiration or things that he takes from her. Yeah. I wondered if you could talk about like the boyfriend character, and also is the actor who plays him an artist himself?
Yeah. Eirik, who plays Thomas, is an artist who has been a friend of mine for like a decade and was somewhat of a placeholder in my head when I was writing the character. But I never thought that I was going to cast him. I think I just floated the idea that I'm coming back to Norway to shoot this movie. And he was like, can I please come to audition? And I wasn't sure if he was going to, prank me or if this was a bad idea. But he showed up being so prepared and it took it so serious and just convinced me that he was Thomas. And, he knows that world. He's been at those openings. He's been at those like dinners with the gallerist after. He knows that world so well that I started like trusting him as an expert within the field. And I even let him write the speech that he gives at the dinner to his gallerist.
Okay. Yeah, that
was something
fantastic
that he wrote. Yeah. And I think the film, like in another thing that I wanted to do was like, I have been very interested in prosthetics and like body horror, but always felt that body horror shows up in body horror movies. Mm. And it never shocks you when you've already set up a world that's like so unusual and strange. There's no like contrast there. And I thought like, what if a movie felt like, a Woody Allen movie, and then suddenly body horror starts appearing and showing up. Mm-hmm. That was like one of the creative kind of incentives for me, was that I wanted to do that. And I wanted to look at a person that you could see in your friend group, like you could know her. This wasn't purely like some insane person that like felt really alien or strange. So I wanted to make sure that I set up, you know, enough pressures around her to go those very big steps from like a person you know in your friend group to like this, you know, kind of a monster character. And I think like the character of the boyfriend became one of those important elements in her immediate surroundings that pushed her towards it. Right, I think she's been in this like bubble that they live in of one-upmanship, as you say, of like, they're both like con artists. Like he, you know, steals and pretends that he's like part of the elite, but it's all like stolen. And she wants to be a part of another type of elite. And she, you know, cheats her way there. And what they're fighting for in this relationship is kind of like, you know, what they say now, the main character syndrome of wanting to be the main character. And, but, you know, in a movie, that's also interesting because you, of course you have a main character in the movie. And we thought, what if the camera wasn't sure who the main character was? So we made this like camera language around it where you might've noticed that it's like panning really like violently between the two characters as though the camera is like trying to decide who am I supposed to focus on? Mm-hmm. So it became like part of the, like her feeling as a character in reality became like the language of her as a character in the movie. And you know, this is how we live. We live with storytelling brains and we think of ourselves as a protagonist and a main character. And all of these elements are of course fun to then bake back into a movie and a character who's struggling with feeling like a side character.
Right. Right. And also like mining lived experience for content, you know, to post and stuff. And yeah, I mean, that main character syndrome is interesting as well, because I feel like on social media, sometimes there's this, it's almost like if you think of the child like touching the hot stove, you kind of want to see how far you can push it. And there's almost this like, I don't know if it's like a masochistic kind of urge to bait, you know, that kind of reaction or like, I guess you could say like, yeah, main charactering of yourself.
Yeah. And there's something too about like when you're in a relationship, if I have a headache alone, my headache is very manageable and I don't, you know, I don't make a big point out of it. Yeah. If I'm in a relationship, my headache is the worst headache I've ever had. And we need to both pay a lot of attention to it. And I need a lot of attention for it. And I need sympathy.
Right. And like, how does the other person not understand how your headache feels?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it is this thing of being in a relationship makes your phenomenology of anything, if it's impatience, if it's worry, if it's illness, they all feel so much stronger and more real. Mm-hmm. And that's another element with like why the relationship aspect was important here. Because what they're doing is like both feeling those feelings where it's exaggerated or amplified by being in a relationship, but the other person isn't giving into it or responding to it at all, which makes you feel even more insane and the headache is even stronger. And and that's like one of the reasons why she has to go to this like really visual extreme of like, look, I am in pain. You have to pay attention to this.
I mean, could you talk more about forming like the visual look of the film and the visual language of it?
Yeah, so one thing is just the visual look of the movie, and then the other is like the look of the skin disease. And the look of the movie was, I felt we were dealing with a very contemporary story. It's about, you know, young characters in an urban environment, and it feels very modern. But I wanted to talk about psychological issues that aren't necessarily as a result of this very moment. It's like kind of timeless issues. So I wanted to make sure that the language around the story was felt more timeless. So I wanted to shoot it on 35 millimeter in what looks like, you know, natural light and with like, you know, a mise-en-scene and the way that the camera moves feels you know, not very modern or of the current age. It's like mm-hmm. kind of a timeless lens. Mm-hmm. And there's like not an emphasis on, you know, screens or, you know, we're not living inside of the internet, because I felt like, yeah, the internet is maybe part of the problem, but isn't the de facto crux of it. It's not like sure. the main thing that makes us act a certain way, even though it can amplify it or incentivize it further. So, you know, these characters have phones and computers and they're normal people, but we're not like focusing on those things. And the score is like a lot of classical piano, and it's all of this, like, I guess, contrasting the youthfulness and the zeitgeist elements of this story with, you know, a timeless feel and look. And regarding to the skin disease, I had a script that kept saying like the skin disease or the rash or whatever, but it never like fully explained what it was going to look like. And I didn't really know either. And I felt like I needed someone to help me just physically make it, because I couldn't, like, I didn't have the words or the language to just describe it. So I found Izzy Galindo, who's a New York prosthetics designer. And we started talking on Zoom, and we sent each other images and sketches, and he sent me like a huge folder of horrific skin diseases. And, you know, I couldn't stomach go through them all. It was too horrific for me. I think he's been like so adjusted to it. And it for him, it's just normal images. To me, it was just like, vomit inducing.
But it seems like kind of a recurring theme in your work. Like, I was looking at the short film you did, Ear, and you had an actor, I know, Adam Pearson, and Drib, and there's this theme of like disfigurement or facial difference that runs through your work.
I think it has been an interest, as I said, for a long time, but always like not really loving the body horror as a genre or a tone in movies, but really loving just the look of those things. And I think they have like popped up in things that I've made that aren't necessarily a body horror typical kind of tone. Mm-hmm. And I think I like that. I like seeing it in, you know, full daylight, without the emphasis on it being strange almost.
Yeah.
And Ear was actually a short that was made just because Sick of Myself was postponed during the pandemic. And Izzy and I had been working just on sketches for so long, and I wanted to make something physical. Like, I wanted to work with prosthetics for real. And so I wrote this short film that was just like grew out of the impatience of waiting to shoot the movie. I just, mm-hmm. you know, made a manageable short film that we could shoot during the pandemic. With the skin disease for Sick of Myself, I think, you know, I have a different kind of tolerance for the horrific imagery than the Izzy has, like a way bigger tolerance. But I think like it was important to me, if we're making like a full feature length movie and half of it is covered in prosthetics, it can't be that horrific to watch. It needs mm-hmm. to be somewhat intriguing to like a normal person. And yeah. also she finds her way into the modeling industry because of it. So it has to have some sort of aesthetic balance.
Right. And I mean, within the narrative or the world of the film, I think that's of course a consideration of, you know, the modeling agencies and the advertising, where it's like different enough that you can have this, let's say, sort of like cynical self-congratulatory thing of like, look at us, look at our inclusivity, but not so different as to, in fact, you know, alienate people. And I think that calculus and the cynicism behind it is a really interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly that, like, balance that both works for our movie, but also works for the modeling industry. Yeah. And what would be acceptable, what's like horrific enough to be newsworthy, but beautiful enough where you can still, you know, be on the cover of a fashion magazine.
Yeah, yeah. And so she gets this skin condition by taking this anxiety medication that she orders over the internet, if I'm remembering correctly.
It's a deep web. She meets her
Silk Road
deep web dealer.
And I wondered if you could sort of talk about that, because I feel like designer drugs are another thing that sort of pops up in your work. Whether it's, you know, we were talking about Whateverist and the character who's making these like DIY drug tutorials on YouTube, and I think in Drib there's also discussion of like you know, designer cocaine or like chemical
synthetic cocaine. That's right. It is, I guess, like an idea that's been following me, and you know, to quote Carl Jung, who said people don't have ideas, ideas have people. And it's almost like I don't choose the ideas, they choose me, sort of thing. I think just like that element of the idea of writing fiction is one thing, but writing a fictional drug or a fictitious brand, I mean, for some reason that is very exciting to me as well. Coming up with, you know, in Sick of Myself, there's a fictitious drug, and there's Regardless, you know, the fashion brand, and she's on the cover of ID magazine, mm-hmm. which is real. So yeah, it is like some necessary like real elements to make the details feel real and lived. But I think another element of me living in LA that has informed the movie is kind of the aesthetic around pharmaceutical industry and mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, very new drugs and new drug names and new logos. And they keep popping up in my feed on whatever social media. And it's like, you know, a new ketamine treatment or a new, you know, organic something, something. And it's
right.
Like, you know, California is notorious for being open-minded to new chemical compounds. And, you know, they'll regulate it more softly here.
But it also becomes more like marketable.
And
it's crazy to see like lifestyle pieces on ketamine and the New York Times and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was like the packaging around Lidexol, our fictitious drug, was like, you know, there is a kind of a history of fictitious drugs in literature, like Burroughs or something, you know, with like Naked Lunch, and the drugs are like these disgusting like bugs that you take. And it's all these like very kind of disgusting things from nature is how it has been like that's like the look and aesthetic of it historically. Mm-hmm. And I thought like, what if it's packaged more in like a millennial way, with, you know, with the colors and the logos and the marketing and the language,
right
that it's somehow like more scary than like a creepy strange bug. It's like, no, it's perfectly looks, you know, inviting, and looks like your health insurance company or something. You know,
exactly.
it all looks the same way now. And it's the scary aspect is that it's so accessible and so like friendly.
That is
the uncanny kind of the strangeness that I was interested in.
Right. And there's also always like a new kind of trending drug, like, you know, Ozempic right now. It's like all of a sudden everyone's taking it.
You
never know what the,
and those names are. Too. Like I love it. It's really, its own art coming up with those names.
Totally. Yeah. I did want to ask, like, if you're, you know, comfortable talking about it or able to talk about it, like, you just finished shooting a new feature in Canada. Is there anything you want to share about that?
Yeah, it's a movie that, we wrapped in November, and it's being edited right now. The company behind it, A24, they haven't released much about it yet. So, you know, I don't want to ruin their strategy on how to talk about the movie, but it's with Nick Cage plays the lead. He's a professor and a father and a husband. Lives in a, you know, suburb of Massachusetts, in a quiet, kind of unremarkable life. And then strange things starts happening and his whole life just turns upside down. And we kind of follow what I consider to be a figure like my own father, trying to navigate, like being at the center of the attention from like almost the world. Mm-hmm. For a hot second. It's a movie that I wrote. It's my first like full, you know, English language, and you know, was so lucky to get an incredible cast on it, and I feel very proud and very like excited about releasing it.
This has been the Screen Slate Podcast. I'm your host, John Derringer. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Christopher Borgley for joining me. Sick of Myself opens tonight, April 12th at IFC Center, and this Friday, April 14th in Los Angeles from Utopia. And I'm hosting the Q&A tonight, April 12th at IFC, and Jeremy Levick does the Thursday, April 13th, 7:30 p.m. Q&A. An extra special shout out to our Patreon members for supporting us. If you want to support the show, visit patreon.com/screenslate. You can also subscribe at iTunes, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.